And we're going to be studying this evening in Matthew, the 14th chapter. Matthew chapter 14, we come first to the question of John the Baptist and his run-in with Herod. It says, at that time Herod the Tetrarch heard the news about Jesus and said to his servants, "This is John the Baptist. He has risen from the dead, and that is why miraculous powers are at work in him. For when Herod had John arrested, he bound him and put him in prison because of Herodias, the wife of his brother Philip. For John had been saying to him, 'It is not lawful for you to have her.'" People get real mixed up over this passage. Why did John say, "It is not lawful for you to have her"? Some say, well, she was married, or she'd been divorced, or... Under the law of Moses, there were a number of sexual prohibitions. In Leviticus 18, if you sit down and count them, there are 18 persons with whom a man must not have relations. In Leviticus chapter 18 and verse 16, it always helps if I let you see these things too. Leviticus chapter 18 and verse 16 there, about the middle. "You shall not uncover the nakedness." In the New International Version, literally says, "have sexual relations with." That's what they're talking about here. "Your brother's wife. It is your brother's nakedness." In other words, the law of Moses specifically forbid, among the 18 exclusions, this one. Unless there was another situation that we'll come into now. His brother had died. But in 2 Samuel chapter 5 and verse 13, I'd just like to, for everybody to remember here, God approved of multiple wives. Don't ever say God didn't approve of that. He did. 2 Samuel chapter 5 and verse 13, David took more concubines and wives in Jerusalem. He already had Abigail and Ahinoam, and he had more sons and daughters who were born to him. And in fact, God gave him Saul's wives. So, the exception to that rule is also given here in Deuteronomy chapter 25. At the same time, if Herod's brother Philip had died, Herod would have been responsible to take his brother's wife and have children with her for his brother's heirs. Now, as you look at this, you say, boy, this just does not fit with what we do today. That's right. We're under a different law, different covenant. Deuteronomy chapter 25. If brothers are living together and one of them dies without a son, his widow must not marry outside the family. Her husband's brother shall take her and marry her, and fulfill the duty of a brother-in-law to her. The first son she bears shall carry on the name of the dead brother, so that his name will not be blotted out of Israel. And if you wonder exactly when this happened that's so important to us, at Ruth chapter 4, beginning at verse 5, then Boaz said, now this is in the book of Ruth, "On the day you buy the land from Naomi, you will also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the dead man's widow, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property." At this, the guardian redeemer said, "Then I cannot redeem it because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself." In other words, he was the next near kinsman, and he said, "I can't do this. You do it." That broke the law. Nevertheless, it was approved of by God. So at verse 10, "I have also acquired Ruth the Moabite, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from his hometown. Today you are witnesses." Now, God approved of this. In fact, when you look at Matthew chapter 1 and verse 5, it's always interesting to me, "Simon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab, Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth, Obed, the father of Jesse." Here they are in the lineage of our Savior. And so as you look at this, obviously this was approved of by God. Coming back then to Matthew 14 and Herod. Herod wanted to kill John, but he was afraid of the people because they considered John a prophet. On Herod's birthday, the daughter of Herodias her name was Salome, it's given elsewhere, danced for the guests and pleased Herod so much that he promised with an oath to give her whatever she asked. Prompted by her mother, she said, "Give me here on a platter the head of John the Baptist." The king was distressed, but because of his oaths and his dinner guests, he ordered that a request be granted and had John beheaded in prison. Now, if you've seen movies about this, or if you've seen paintings about this, you've seen the imagination of a lot of people. And along at the same time, if you read carefully with me there, you will find out that there's nothing that indicates that her dance had anything sexual in nature about it. But when you get to the opera, I'll tell you what, they really fix it up. And some preachers do as well. But you can look again. If you look at the Greek especially, you'll find out there's nothing to indicate that other than that she leaped high. Well, as you think about this, I just ask you to remember, stick with scriptures, brethren. Then we come to Jesus' feeding of the 5,000. And this is a notable miracle. Why did Jesus feed the 5,000? You know, if we get over to John chapter 6, he wouldn't feed them again. He said, "No, you came not because you wanted the scriptures, but because you ate the loaves and the fishes and were filled." We do not attract people to the Lord's church by giving them a good meal. Now, I recognize that there are lots of churches of Christ who have strayed from the way. They like to have nice suppers. They like to have repasts. They like to have all kinds of get-togethers. The Lord didn't approve of such. Jesus feeds them because they're a long way away from any town where they can get food. And the disciples said, "What are we going to feed them? We have here only 5 loaves and 2 fish. That little boy that had those. But Jesus told them to start passing it out. They picked up what was left over of the broken pieces, 12 full baskets. There were about 5,000 men who ate besides women and children. This is the meal. If you wonder what happens here, there, one of these two types of bread is probably what the little boy had. There are some other breads, but they are nice breads that are raised breads, challah and other things. But this is ashtanur, a sugarless sourdough bread, and pita, also a sourdough bread. You see those great big holes in there? That's pretty indicative of a sourdough. For those of you who are not bakers, the difference is you use a lactobacillus, which grows in a sour medium, instead of Saccharomyces, which does better in a sweet bread. On the other side of that thing, you will see the red-belly tilapia. There are 14 different kinds of tilapia around the world. This is the one that's found in the Mediterranean, in the Sea of Galilee, rather. It's freshwater fish. That fish is about as long as my hand. Look at the knife and fork laying there beside it. I put that in there. This is from a meal that someone had near the Sea of Galilee, well, in Tiberias. And so, by the way, that's the way the Israelis know how to ruin a fish. It's the worst tasting fish I've ever had in my life. They just make a score on it, throw it into a pot of boiling oil, and boil it for a while, and it's terrible. But that's what they had. So they had 5 loaves and 2 fishes. And out of this, those little fish that are about 9 inches long, and by the way, that would be all the way across that plate if you start looking at it. If you look at the body of the fish, it's less than that. With that, Jesus fed 5,000. This is a notable miracle. And again, as you look at those breads, the reason that I think those were the breads is because the little boy had them. They were easy to carry. Both of those are stovetop breads, by the way. They're not cooked in an oven. They're just take the dough and throw it on top of a griddle or a stone or whatever and cook it and flip it over. And that's why they always sort of look burned in some places. And obviously the one at the top there has a little bit of some sort of condiment on it. Now, we move on then. And Jesus' disciples are out on the water. One of the most difficult things I've had was times I've had is trying to find a true picture of a storm on the Sea of Galilee, because there are skeptics who do not believe that such storms occur. But they do. The boat was already a long distance from the land. Now, bear in mind, it's going to come up in one of the slides, this is a little lake. It's 8 miles wide at its widest. It's 13 miles long. It's 141 feet deep in the middle, and the sides just drop off just really steep. So there are very high currents. And today when you go there, if you get the chance, and I encourage y'all, if you get a chance, go. It's wonderful. You'll find out things that you had mistaken ideas about. You want to see Israel if you can. In fact, some of the slides that I use here are from Brother Larry Haverstock's blog. Haverstock came here and held a meeting. Remember, I was blind, but now I see. He was blind as a young child, but then he saw, and he said, going to the land of Israel is like that. You see and you have a different idea immediately. He said, I didn't know how to preach until I went to the land of Israel, and now I've been there and I know. He spent a lot of time there, and he likes to take pictures of everything, and they're on his blog if you'd like to. Now, there's a lot of talking on his blog too. In the fourth night of the watch, he came to them walking on the sea. When his disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, it's a ghost. You've probably heard a joke about, shall we show him where the rocks are? There are no rocks on the shores of the Sea of Galilee on which you may walk out to a boat. It drops off. If the boat's just a little bit off the land, I mean, you got to remember, it's 8 miles wide and it's 141 feet deep. It is a steep lake. But that's why it can have waves on it. It's not like these little lakes that we see. Immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, take courage, it is I, be not afraid. I like this. This is probably the size of the boat that they were looking at. This is a picture of some tourists on a boat on the Sea of Galilee in 1892. And so as you think about this, they're going out on this boat to look at things, and you can see that sea is just as calm as it can be there. That's just a dead calm. Peter told the Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water. And he said, come. And Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came toward Jesus. But seeing the wind, he became frightened, and beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me. Now, you know that on another time, Peter threw himself into the water and swam to shore. There are tremendous currents in this lake. And that's why I say, everywhere you go, everywhere there's a beach, it will tell you, do not swim. A colleague of mine from the university who was a national collegiate champion in swimming, I said, did you swim in that thing? He said, sure I did. I did not. I looked at that and I said, I don't know how strong those currents are, but I'll just honor their request, because the Israelis are not big on warning signs. When you go to Israel and you start climbing on some rock, believe me, you're not going to sue somebody when you fall off of it. You're just going to fall off of it, and they have lots of rocks, and they don't have many things to hold on to on them. But Jesus stretched out his hands to Peter and said to him, you have little faith. Why did you doubt? When they got into the boat, the wind stopped. Now, these guys have got to immediately think, what is going on? And those who were in the boat worshiped him, saying, you are certainly God's son. This picture is taken in the Sea of Galilee. It's out of a newspaper, November 27th, 2014. As I said, I searched for several hours to find a picture that was truly of the Sea of Galilee. When you put that in there, Google just thinks, oh, you want to see. And they have all kinds of pictures, and there are lots of drawings of this from people who've never been there. They don't have any clue about this. And this is a big storm on the Sea of Galilee. So you can understand why these folks immediately understood this was God. God was with them. They worshiped him. Now, Jesus accepted their worship. He didn't say, hey, don't do that. All this I will give you from Jesus' temptation by Satan. He said, Satan is speaking, if you will bow down and worship me. Jesus said to him, away from me, Satan, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only. Jesus knew that God was the only one to be worshipped. He accepted worship at least four times that I recall quickly from his disciples and from others about this because he was the Son of God. Now, there are scholars who will say, well, Jesus didn't believe he was the Son of God. It's foolishness. They should read the Bible. Now, again, it says when they had crossed over, that is, they've crossed over the lake then from one side to the other. They come to Gennesaret, and when the men of that place recognized him, they sent word into all the surrounding district and brought to him all who were sick. They recognized that Jesus had the ability to heal them. They implored him that they might touch the fringe of his cloak, and as many as touched it were cured. This is the northwest coast of the Sea of Galilee, the plain of Gennesaret. And that is courtesy of Brother Haver, Larry Haverstock, as I said. This is down at the south end of the lake. You're looking to the north. You can see the Golan Heights over there in the background. And you see this plain where everything is extremely fertile. Galilee was known as a very fertile region. And so as you look at this, you realize looking at that and going back to this, I found two pictures of the Sea of Galilee in my search. One was after the storm had finished, and another was a copyrighted picture that I decided not to put in here, which had a very minor storm. This was a major storm. In fact, the rains the preceding day had, or the preceding evening, had raised the entire level of the lake by about 7 inches. So they were very thrilled to have the water in the lake. But again, don't let anyone tell you, and I saw a number of people saying this, even from Israel, that there were no storms on the Sea of Galilee. There you have it. And if you want the citation so that you can look it up yourself, that 27 November 2014 will do it. But and I've got the footnote down there. But it is not a gentle sea like this all of the time. So Jesus walking on the water was something that did amaze them. If you're here this evening and you realize that you have not lived as you should, or if you realize that indeed Jesus was the Son of God, I would encourage you to determine that you're going to live for Jesus, that you accept His word, and that you follow what He told His disciples to do in Matthew chapter 28 and verse 19 when He said, "Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe whatsoever I've commanded you, and lo, I'm with you always to the end of the age." If you would have Jesus as your Savior, won't you let us know as together we stand and we sing.